Hello and welcome to my podcast called Adventures on the Can-Do. I am your host, Jothi Rosenberg, aka the Incorrigible Entrepreneur. A professor turned entrepreneur and founder of 9 companies, on this show I talk with business leaders and personal achievers. Adventures on the Can-Do explores the challenges and rewards of entrepreneurship, overcoming adversity, and where grit and perseverance get you. Be inspired by others and push yourself along your path to success and fulfillment. Before we jump into today's episode, just a reminder of how you can support this podcast. You can go to my website, jothirosenberg.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And there you can see other episodes of this podcast. Also, please follow us on one of the many social media channels we post on. And with all that behind us, let me introduce our guest on today's episode, Lindy Nowak. Lindy Nowak is the founder of Up in a Day, a company building professional websites for small businesses without the headache. After a corporate career as a creative director at renowned brands like Women's Health Magazine, Entertainment Weekly, and L'Oreal in New York City, she pursued her entrepreneurial dream 5 years ago. Recognizing an unmet need, Lindy launched Up in a Day to help small businesses and solo entrepreneurs get professional websites built quickly, creating a process that makes it effortless for busy people. And here's Lindy. Hi, Lindy.
Hi, Jothi. How are you?
I'm good. I see Miami in the background, which is pretty cool. And I wanted to start off by asking you, you are running your own firm. It's a website design firm, and it's called Up in a Day. So why did you start Up in a Day?
Thank you for asking. And thank you for having me on your show. I'm so excited. I started Up in a Day because I saw a need in the market to help small business owners and solopreneurs get websites up quickly without the long wait time, and to get websites that really work for their business to help attract the right customers, to get them in the door to take action and to truly help grow their business.
So I want to ask this. Are they all literally up in a day?
It's a great question. Some are up in a day. I'll tell you who they are. Some are up in a week and some are up in a month. So the ones that come to us and they'll literally say, like, I need a website tomorrow. I need a website in 3 days. These are actually tech startups or any type of startup that are going for their next series of funding. Whether or not they have a bad website or no website at all, they need something quick because they're going into their meetings. And we actually get a lot of those. So that's pretty cool to be able to, you know, get them up super fast. We have a whole internal process and system that allows us to do that. Other clients come in the door and they really want to work with us, but getting up in a day is really dependent on the clients sending us all of their content and their branding. And sometimes they need a little bit more time. But the cool thing about what we offer is that once we do have all of their content, we can get them up and running within days, weeks, depending on how, when they want to get up, be up and running.
So you've got employees, you've got them, their families, like depending on you. Where did you get the gumption to be able to just take that on?
I think as a person innately, I am a giver. I'm the type of person that is always wanting to help. I love seeing people find success, whatever success means to them. Any kind of help that I can give along the way, I'm always there for. So I think that having staff and being able to support them is really rewarding for me. I didn't even consider how rewarding it would be. Hiring staff was just by nature of the growing company. I held on as long as I could with just a couple freelancers in and out, like a VA, and we started getting busier. But the busier we got, the more I found myself working in the business And I started to get tired again, like that grind from corporate again. And I remember the day I was like, what am I doing? Like, you know, it takes money, it takes spending money to make money. And I said, I need people in the company that are here all the time, every day, all day, that can do what I need done way better than I can do. It's like always about hiring somebody that can do it better than you can. And so I started shopping around and found two really great people that are still on my staff today, now on the management team. And the business has grown immensely because of them, and watching them grow and keeping them happy, like ultimately makes them happy at home. Again, going back to your question, that's so rewarding for me. And then it really doesn't seem like a burden at all. Like, you know, that like, oh my gosh, I have to pay my staff this month. Like, it's just, we're all like having fun building this company. And so when you have fun and you relax, like I have this like little relaxed thing up here because I tend to be intense sometimes. The things just roll along and people come in the door, and sometimes they do, sometimes they buy, sometimes they don't. But, you know, when we're slow, we come up with new services. So that part, actually that part of having staff and having to take care of them and their families keeps me on my toes for building the company and pulling in more services to offer.
But are you able to, I mean, is the business predictable enough that you have enough of a, you know, cash reserve that you can make it through, you know, slower times, and you're not going to sort of run out of cash to make payroll?
Oh, that's a great question. I do have a cash reserve. I am like deathly afraid of debt. When I made sure before I hired anyone on staff that there was enough in the bank to cover at least 6 months. So for both of them. So yeah, I have to make sure that money's always coming in the reserves just in case, because up in a day, from what I see, we're 3 years young. We do have slow times. And it's funny. It's almost like, it kind of reminds me of the stock market. Like it's like the ebb and flow of like the way people move around the world. Like, you know, during holidays, or right now, I was telling you before we started recording that we're a little slow right now because everyone is taking their kids on spring break. So it's really interesting to see how, if we are actually like more of a seasonal company, that's why we have to have the reserves.
Well, what are your short and maybe long-term goals for Up in a Day?
Short-term goals would be to keep it boutique, keep my staff very slim, get to $1 million in revenue. Specific goals would be get to $1 million in revenue in the next 3 years. Long-term goals would be to continue setting up this company to sell it in 10 years.
Sell it in 10 years. And then you're done? That's it? You're done?
I don't know if I'll ever be done. I have this other secret passion / like side hustle. I actually have my captain's license. It's a commercial captain's license. I have my six pack, which means I can take up to 6 paying clients or customers on a boat at a time for a certain size boat. So I think maybe I'll move back to the water after I sell Up in a Day. I don't know. We'll see where the wind takes me. Maybe it takes me into creating a product and selling it. My sister and I have been toying with a couple ideas, which I won't disclose here.
Right. It would jinx it.
That. Yeah, exactly.
But you can't just move to the water. You kind of have a two body problem, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I mean, you do. Yeah. So, I guess maybe he wants to hang out on a boat too. I don't know.
I could see him wanting to hang out on a boat. Yeah.
So has this just been like steady, steady growth? Have you had any glitches, any surprises, scares, anything like that?
It's been steady. I'd like to say it's been steady growth. I had one glitch, which was right before I hired my staff. So it was last summer. For 2 months, I didn't make a sale. And it was like, what is happening? Like, is this company working? Is this going to work? I actually was not in freakout mode. I think like maybe a little bit subconsciously I was in freakout mode, but I found myself being like ultra relaxed about it. Like not waking up at 3 a.m. type of relaxed. And it gave me some like a reflection time to really stand back and look at the company and to see what it needed. And that gap, that kind of like dip in sales, allowed me to realize I needed staff to help me grow it. I couldn't do it alone. Other than that, yes, it's just been steady growth. So 30% year over year.
Is it all word of mouth? How are you getting your leads?
I get my leads through LinkedIn. We do a lot of organic outreach. We do a little paid outreach. Most recently super active on LinkedIn, just in terms of like our posting and what we post, which really helps when you're reaching out to people you don't know on LinkedIn that you might be able to help. This year alone, since November last year, we have started to become a referral business, which has been really beautiful. You know, as a company, your dream is to have a referral business so you don't have to put so much money, time and effort behind marketing. And so far we've been pretty lucky with the referrals.
What percentage of your leads are coming through just referrals versus the stuff you're doing, aggressively, like the LinkedIn and the paid stuff. So how much is referrals?
Right now, I would say we are about 30% referrals, and hoping to grow that referral network. So how did it become a referral-based business so quickly? It's because we are turnkey, right? So we build websites really fast, which means we build a lot of websites. The more websites we build, the happier, or the more clients we have in the door, the more relationships we make, and the more relationships we make and make people happy, they're more apt to refer us. And so that's how the referral business is building so quickly just in year three. That and our newsletter, actually, I forgot to mention, the other way we get clients in the door. So I'm usually facing the client for the sale. If they are not ready to buy, or they decided that it wasn't right for them for whatever reason, we still keep them on our list and we put them on our newsletter. And so we send two different types of newsletters, like newsletters to all clients, and I call them like prospects. And then we have another newsletter just for clients, which is more like educational, what's happening in Squarespace, that kind of stuff. So we're really strategic about what we're putting in our newsletters for these prospects. And I would say we have a 20% return rate just from the newsletters alone, because you're staying top of mind with these people. And it's sad, like some of them come back to us and they're like, oh my gosh, Lindy, I should have just gone with you guys in the beginning. I went and got this website done. I spent X amount, the developer disappeared and it's not done. And I don't know what to do. And it's like, oh my gosh, we got you.
I don't know why it is, but there's so much pain around websites. I mean, I was using WordPress. It seemed like a really good way to build a website. I could do most of it myself. And then it gets really complicated, because WordPress is like a programming platform. It's not drag and drop. It's pretty tough. And then I think the hosting people that you just sort of shop around for, they don't seem to be a good bargain. And so speaking of which, you know, so what you've chosen is this platform, Squarespace, that's both a design environment, drag and drop, and they host. So they're not separate. Well, WordPress has a hosting capability too, but most people build a site in WordPress and host it somewhere else. I don't know what percent of Squarespace's business is coming through you. I mean, I know it's not a huge percentage, but it's a steady stream of business. Do they offer someone that does that, like you guys, a cut of their new revenue that they get through you?
Yeah, they do. They do. We're on a referral program with them. So we're Squarespace partners, and we get, anywhere from $100 to $400 per websites that we launch, basically.
Just one, just once, not every year?
No, not every year. I wish. I actually wish the referral program was a little bit stronger, especially given people like us, like when we are saying, hey, Squarespace, we're going to give you guys, let's say over 100 clients a year. Right. And right now they only have like that small referral fee. Wouldn't it be nice if we had something else? a little bit more, you know?
Well, every business wants, I mean, the gold standard of type of revenue is, annually recurring revenue. And since they're making money every year, not just when you bring a site, but they're hosting them, you should participate in that. As long as that company is hosting their site with them, it's only fair.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Actually, somebody once told me to consider hosting the website, our client websites, through Squarespace. So we would essentially purchase the subscription, which is just under $300 a year, and then we would bill the client a little bit more than that, or bill the client on a monthly basis. But I don't like that business model. So that's why we rely on the referrals coming straight from Squarespace. Because the idea being that when we are done with the website and the client signs off, we transfer ownership completely to them so that they feel ownership of their site. Just by nature of so many people coming to us 3 years ago being like, I don't know how to use my site. I don't know how to get in. Like, I'm totally lost. I just want to make the smallest update. I'm like, geez, there's got to be a better way to help these people. I digress. But yes, we should be getting a referral fee on the annual payment that the clients are making. I agree.
So, in the spirit of, how tech startups think about things, and you're not technically a tech startup, but the reason I felt like it was really good to, include you in this is that, well, first of all, you're servicing a lot of tech startups yourself, but you're working in technology. Squarespace is doing a lot of pretty innovative things. And I imagine you're giving them feedback and helping them do it better. But you are a little bit constrained. There are certain things you really can't do in Squarespace. But you've decided that what they have is right for most of your customers. I mean, you might find somebody that says, no, it has to do this. And you say, well, I'm sorry, it might not work. But at some point, you must have gotten really good at Squarespace. You must have looked at it and said, this is going to give me product market fit. This is going to be right for the market I'm going after. And you've got you know, you've got, like you said, some really nice steady growth. Were you really sure? I mean, how did you go about proving to yourself that this was really going to fly and allow you to build a growing business? Was it just because Squarespace was doing well, or did you really go through a process where you built some sites for people and said, is this going to work for a lot of people?
Awesome question. I did that. So, and I also want to address the tech startup, and provide a little insight about, like, how can we turn around so many websites in X amount of time. I mean, it's all set with our internal processes that we set up. So we do a lot of automation here. So we have a lot of SaaS products working behind the scenes. When I came up with the idea for Up in a Day, it was like a 5-minute revelation. I was listening to a podcast that was talking about productizing your service as opposed to creating a product and a new to market product and selling it. Well, my dream was to create a new to market service and productize that as a service. So how do you productize a service to someone? And so I sat back and I said, I want to do this. I want to try. So I came up with, you do the exercise. What do you love doing? What are you really good at? And how long does it take you to do it? Is there a market for it? And how much can you make out of this? So it took me quite a few months to really devise this business plan I created the process as which I saw, because in my head, having, come from a family, a family who had so many small businesses, my family, restaurants, ice cream shops, beach stores. They still do that. I mean, they have it all. They have scooter stands in Key West. I mean, it's so I know there's so many small businesses out there, individuals, copywriters, for example, coaches, consultants, who all need something simple that they can just work with that looks awesome, right? And also, there are a lot of bad websites out there, which I knew. So to create this productized service, I had to really step back and be like, is this going to work? Is there a real market for this? How much can I really make? And then how much can I charge that's affordable for the clientele, the market we're going after, which I know exactly who it is to start. Of course, your business evolves. What is that threshold? Okay, now what are the margins? And then what are the processes? So I started by setting up the process to onboard the client, to start the website, to design the website, execute the whole thing, develop it, review with the client, and then send them off. What is that wheel? That machine that you're starting to create. Once I created the first demo, I brought in 3 people. I got on the phone with 50 people. And I said, listen, I will design your website for free. This is what I'm looking to do. What do you think about the idea? They came in the door, built these websites. It was like clockwork. I was like, that's it. We got this. Totally. This is totally going to work. And the only reason why it works is because Squarespace is just a tool. It's just a tool, your marketing tool. It's just the tool at which you're creating something, your product. They're giving me the pieces to create this product and sell it. So therefore, in a way, that is part of my thank you to them. So that's really how I decided that this was going to be a success, testing the market.
Okay, I get how you can automate a bunch of this, but it's not completely a cookie cutter kind of thing. You might have some clients that have some marketing DNA, and then you're going to have some that have very little marketing DNA. And in the latter case, aren't they going to kind of need you as a marketing consultant, which is going to slow your process down and put like a, I don't know, a wrench in the machine. Or sorry, a, what do I mean? You know, something that stops the machine is what I was trying to say.
Totally, because they're asking a lot of questions. They're not techie. They don't understand like what.
Well, they don't understand the colors and the messaging and oh. And so if somebody comes in like that and they say, "I want a great website," and a website is, you know, first and foremost, it's marketing, and then you know it's got ways in which people can buy things from you or learn things that they need to pay for, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, you built two websites for me in this recent past. So let's talk about that. So one already existed but I was getting, it was a WordPress one. It was really hard to maintain, but at least there was things that I could say to you, I like this, I don't like this. And you were, you know, you didn't have to, we had a brand, we had some messaging that was going to play well into your processes and your being, you know, somewhat, I mean, you could have had that one up in a day, honestly, but definitely. I wasn't in a hurry. And so, you know, you got to go to the people that did need it up a day and charge them three times as much for the speed. but the other one was brand new. And I don't claim to be, you know, I have a tiny bit of marketing knowledge because a few really good marketing people have rubbed off on me over the years. And so what did you do there? I mean, you asked me about colors, you gave some advice. I listen well to somebody that it's like when you go to the restaurant and they ask you, how do you want this cooked? I say, well, how does the chef think I should want it? You know, and you're the chef in this case.
And we're the chef. So what happens when people come to us and they're like, I have a logo and I like blues. That's all I know. Everything else, I leave it to you guys. That's 99% of our clients, to be honest. And that's exactly what we love. And going back to how do we address that, those situations? So we do a lot of research on a quarterly basis on user experience. We do a lot of research on cool looking websites, new website design. Where is website design going in 2024, even 2025? We like to set up our clients for longevity, obviously. We don't want to give them an outdated site again. So that's a lot of research that we have ongoing internally with my team. From that, we have, you know, I come from a marketing background. In publishing for many, many years, as well as branding and graphic design. So that's part of being able to envision what these clients need, but I can't do it all. So I need staff that can do what I do, but of course better. So we develop, you know, our websites are almost, if you will, like semi-custom. So we develop frameworks for all kinds of industries that we work with. And these frameworks are like proven, you know, to convert by nature of having done so many websites and our clients being like, oh my gosh, our conversions increased by 30%, or calls to the office increased by 10% in 28 days. And we're like, all right, it's working. And then we do surveys and things like that. So when a client will say, well, I love blues, but you know, fonts, I don't know, I'm open. I like clean fonts, modern, no problem, we have you. So we, just by nature of being good designers, good marketers, and getting to know our clients, all of our clients, as you know, they have a framework, like questionnaire for their copy. If they're not great at writing and messaging, and we don't expect them to be, we'll sometimes finesse. And if we can't finesse and they're really stuck, then we have a team of copywriters too that can write websites for our clients. And a lot of people take that route just because they're busy. They're busy business owners who don't want to have to deal with nitpicking at the website.
So that means that if you have somebody who does think they're really good at marketing, they might be a little bit more challenging for you then.
Yes. It does happen, actually. It's been, we've actually had to change the structure in which we review with clients, starting with deciding if we should have two reviews instead of just the one review, you know, to make, because if they are adamant about, like, they want it their way, like they are really direct on what they want marketing, like from a marketing perspective, we honor that wholeheartedly and we totally respect that. We have no egos here. But it is challenging for me, as you know, working in like the on the sales, to recognize that off the bat. That's actually difficult to see.
You ought to come up with some questions. Yeah, I was going to say the questions will be key to figuring out if they're that kind of person. Maybe you need to give them a personality test.
I know. I just thought of that. Totally.
You know, actually, to be on a podcast, a different, you know, on a guest on a podcast. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of that personality test called DISC, DISC?
Yes.
So one of the podcast hosts asked me to take that test before being on. So he knew how to ask me questions.
Oh, that's lovely.
Maybe you do that for your clients.
I like that idea. How long did the DISC questionnaire take you?
Oh, I don't know. Let me think. 20 minutes? Kind of long, actually. 20 minutes.
Oh. Okay. Interesting. That's a really nice approach. That's a really nice approach for referrals coming to us, because when the referrals come to you, they're already sold. They're like, let's get this done. And I'm like, okay, wait, is this, you know, because I have to vet these clients. Like, are they going to be good fit for our process? Because we're really different than other website agencies. You know, we're very turnkey. Yeah. Like, we're going to design the whole site. We're going to review with you. You come back with your edits and then we're going to launch, and then you'll have support after. So, yeah.
So besides the fact that you're a small business and so much of what you've been describing is the same for other small businesses, tech startups or otherwise. But one of the reasons I very much wanted you on was because I like to talk about grit in these episodes. And you know, we were probably too busy talking about websites to really have this conversation, but I certainly got the sense that and the audience probably who's on video probably can't tell that you told me that you're short. I've intentionally made sure that you're taller right now. You look taller than me in this. Okay.
Right.
But I get the sense that you've got a lot of grit, and whether it's grit that you had from before you started this, or, you know, you accumulated more while you were, you know, building this. I just always like to hear the stories of people have for their source of grit.
It could stem from me being the middle child, perhaps. I did lose both of my parents at a young age, within 10 years of each other. Both times I was young. So that was obviously extremely difficult. When you're young, you don't realize how difficult it is because you just power through. You just go. And when you're a little bit older in your 30s and you lose a parent who's ill for a long time, that'll take some steam out of you for sure. But you walk away walk away as a different person. I would also say that. So there's that I think was just like really like in taking those experiences and being very present about them and being very aware and not dwelling on the sadness, but really appreciating what you have now, like your health and like your time that you have on this earth and being able to take your dreams and make them happen. Additionally, when I was in corporate, my first 4 years, I was at L'Oreal. I was 27 years old. I was from Michigan. I was extremely naive. I was just like this little girl from a small, you know, Lake Michigan town. And I fell into this kind of toxic world of the brand I worked in. And I was there for 4 years. It burned me out extremely. And one day my parents called me up in New York City, when I was in New York City, and they said, "Kid, you got to just pack your bags." They said another word, and move to Brazil. And I was like, ha ha ha. Cause I had like always like had this dream of going to Brazil for some reason. And 6 months later, I was gone. I made my own decision. I left a boyfriend. I left my apartment. I left all my things. I packed a few bags, went to Florida, dropped them off at my parents' house, rented a car, drove to Miami Airport, and took an 11 p.m. flight to Florianopolis, Brazil, knowing zero, no one, some pictures on the internet. I knew they had an MTV beach house. I thought that was pretty cool. They had some awesome surf there, beautiful beaches. It was an island. I landed at night. I found myself at a hostel knocking on the gate, slept till 3 the next day. And 3 years later, I came back to New York City and I never looked back. I like basically ended up moving to Rio. I worked there. I made the, you know, I just changed as a person. I became this like from like this kind of bitchy New York woman, like stomping around the city, to like this really like at ease, like go with the flow, like beautiful soul. And I ended up moving back to New York. And really, I think what I adapted most out of living in Brazil and living with like very little money was grit. Always just kind of making the next thing happen, living in the present moment, and playing a lot of sports definitely helps. I'm very competitive with myself. I think that I don't know where that comes from. So I've told you that you can see this island, everybody back here. I was telling Jothi the other day that I'm part of a swim group that swims around that thing, and it's about 3 miles. Every Sunday. So we get on, we put our swim buoys on, we jump in the bay and we swim around that island. I don't know. You just get out of there and you're like, I did that.
And you, what are the other sports? Cause you do seem like a bit of a jock. So
I'm wearing like frills today for you and earrings.
Well, the audience who's got video appreciates that, but I know that you I know about the swimming, but you do something every day.
I do. Yes, I am an avid tennis player, and my favorite thing right now, well, two favorite things. I play beach volleyball, like super 1980s on South Beach in Miami in the mornings. And it's intense. It's 2 hours in an intermediate clinic. So that's awesome. And then I just picked up windsurfing, which I don't know if anybody in your audience has ever tried that. It's incredible. I also sail. Just going back to the grit, you actually don't know this story. So grit, yes. Interesting. I'm like sweating thinking about the stuff I've done. So when I actually, before I moved to Brazil, Jothi, I decided I was going to go to Key West where my sister was, my brother, and I was going to work on these snorkel boats. That's how I got my captain's license. And I ended up, before Brazil, I actually ended up staying there for about 8 to 10 months because I decided to get my captain's license. I was a lifeguard on those huge catamarans that take people out to the reef and snorkel. So I became this like kind of badass lifeguard because people would like forget where they're going and they'd be on the other side of the reef and you have to go get them, or they'd be on top of the reef and touching it and you have to go grab them off. You get people like jumping in the water that don't know how to swim, even if they're wearing like their PFDs to go jump and grab them. I'm 5'2". These guys would be like, you know, 6'3 and 250 pounds. So I had a nice six pack from that. So that is where I really, really, really learned how to, like, that was work ethic. That was like coming home after 12 hours on the water, crying because my feet hurt so bad. And then just getting up the next day and going, and then getting up the next day and going. And finally, you just like get used to it. And you're just like being on that water and jumping in and being a lifeguard and driving those boats. It's just like becomes second nature. It's really incredible when you set your mind to something that you really love doing, even though it's really hard at first, it's so rewarding because you just become it and it becomes you. It's really beautiful. And then I decided to go to Brazil and chill out. When I moved back to New York after Brazil, I picked up sailing. And I picked up sailing in Long Island. And I became part of a team. I started sailing as crew on a 42-foot Beneteau with a captain and two other, sometimes three other crew members. And one day, we were doing a huge race that was about 8 hours long. It was down and back through the Long Island Sound. And it was this really weird day in spring. It was really like dark. It was like kind of quiet, like kind of windy, kind of not, really humid. We're making our way east, I believe. Yeah, we were making our way east, going the first round before we turned around. And we were doing well. I think there were probably like 30 other boats in the regatta. And so when we turned around, all of a sudden the wind just completely changed and we were downwind and we were overpowered. And we had the jib, the mainsail. We took the jib down, which was so hard. We put the spinnaker up. And as soon as we put that spinnaker up, right before we put the spinnaker up, my captain was like, "Everybody, put on your PFDs right now." And typically when you're in bad weather, foul weather, you're going to clip into the boat and you're going to put the line on. So you're connected to the boat with a line, a rope. And so we put on our PFDs. These are like the high, like professional ones that will, you know, blow up in the water when you land in it. And so we didn't clip in. And as soon as we put the spinnaker up, a side wind came and the entire boat just went boo. And I just went full line. We're in like 20, 30 mile an hour winds going downwind. That was it. Bye bye. And there I was in the water and I saw boats coming from behind me. I was in full gear, like heavy jacket. I was in heavy pants, my shoes, like everything. And my boyfriend was on the boat at the time, which I thought he fell over. So I'm looking around. I'm fine. I'm just like, I don't know. I just like got this crazy calmness. First thing I did, what's to the right? Second, what's to the left? Which ones? It's about a mile and a half that way and about 2 to 3 miles that way. So I was like, okay, can I swim there? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, Eric, I think he's off the boat. And I just started screaming. And I couldn't see him anywhere. I see the boat just going like crazy. Spinnaker's going wild. They're way down now. Long story short, they do end up coming back around by motor after they get the spinnaker down. Eric was on the boat. They threw me a line. It took them four times to come around and get me because the weather was so bad. And so I finally like grabbed this huge line. It was like super thick. And they dragged me. Just dragged me as far as like they could until they could start to pull me up. And it, I swear to God, I'm surprised I didn't rip my shoulder out of socket, but that was probably how I got a lot of grit too.
Yeah.
So this is nice. I'm like, I'm getting like shaking talking about it. Cause I haven't told that story in so long. I guess it's kind of nice playing beach volleyball every day.
Well, I just, volleyball seems like a tall person sport.
Oh, I'm terrible. I mean, what's the point? I'm terrible. I mean, today my coach said, "Lindy, when you play with me, like doubles, you gotta fight. And I'm like, I'm not fighting. I can't jump up there and get that.
All right, I shouldn't make short people jokes. It's not fair.
Oh, please do. I think it's hilarious.
It's not fun. Look, I think we're good.
It's going to be a wrap for today. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Adventures on the Can Do. Please share and like us on your social media channels. This is Jothi Rosenberg, and I'll be back with a new episode every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Don't forget to check out the show notes for additional resources and links. Hasta la vista.